need of replacement, so we're looking for someone to donate enough carpet for two rooms. We are looking for dark, commercial-grade carpet and volunteer carpet layers who can help us with this project. Call 713-526-4000. In addition to carpet, our roof is leaking and we need qualified roofers to help repair or replace our roof. If you would like to help KPFT, call 713-526-4000.
Welcome to another edition of the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. It's 10:02 here in Houston on 90.1 KPFT. A pleasure to have you this morning. The topic this morning is something that I referred to, an issue that I referred to a few weeks back. TXU, the Dallas-based utility, is planning to build 11 coal-fired power plants in Texas. There are a few other colleague companies of TXU that are planning to add another five or six or so to the mix, which will effectively double, perhaps more than double, the number of coal-fired power plants here in Texas. The problem is that the plants that are on the drawing board are not using new coal gasification technology, which would reduce significantly by 90% the amount of CO2 going into the air, as well as providing other environmental benefits. The type of coal plant that is being used is the old-style coal plant, in which coal is pulverized and then combusted and results in complete and total release of CO2 into our atmosphere. To help us understand, one more thing. The governor of the state of Texas, Governor Rick Perry, last year signed an executive order to fast-track the permitting process for these plants to get them in under the wire. Of course, TXU and other utilities like it are concerned that there may be imminent caps and restrictions on emitting of CO2 into the atmosphere by the federal government or by other regulating authorities, and they're in a race, therefore. So, what do we do? This story began last year, but it is now gaining some momentum, and we will be helped later in the show by Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News, who really appears to me to be the lead reporter covering this story. I asked the environmental reporters at Houston Chronicle if they would participate. They are not covering this story. Not covering this story. I asked the writer of an article in the Wall Street Journal, Rebecca Smith, who wrote a very long article a matter of weeks ago about this, to appear. She declined. And I also asked General Electric to appear to talk about coal gasification technology. Presumably GE and companies like it have the technology solution for how to burn coal more cleanly. I asked them to come on and talk about the technology. I made the mistake, though, of mentioning TXU, and I think when they heard that, they said, no thanks. They don't want to get in the middle of a political battle, and I take the blame for that. I just should have said, I want you folks on to talk about the technology. We'll try him again later, and I am disappointed they didn't appear. Before we get to Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News, we'll do a few housekeeping items, get to a few news items, and then to the main topic of the day. First, newcapitalshow.com is the website. if you sign yourself up for the letter goes out the day or the night before, sometimes the morning of the show, with links to all the articles which I cite and all the subjects and so forth. www.newcapitalshow.com is the address. Let's see, where do we go first? I'd first like to turn my attention for a few minutes to the stock options backdating scandal. And, of course, stock options, executive stock options, have already got a bad name because executives just give them to themselves willy-nilly through the approval of the board. And it's come out recently that it's even worse than that. Not only are they given these things, but they also are taking advantage. Well, actually, they're breaking the law in that they are backdating the date that they receive the option. So, for example, they'll receive an option grant, and then 6 months later, they'll actually finalize the option grant. And what they will do is they will look back over the course of the year to the day when the stock price was cheap. You know, stock prices move over the course of a year like any other, you know, constant process. And they will look for when it was cheapest, and they will then finalize the legal paperwork on that day. They will 6 months later say, oh, it was back on July 26th when I was granted this option. And the stock at the time that they actually finalize this paperwork will be $13 a share, for example. And the date on which they write the option is granted will reflect a stock price of $9. So they'll have a built-in, guaranteed $4 profit on paper of their stock option. And there are now prosecutions that are imminent because this is clearly thievery. I mentioned stock options several months back, and I talked about them in a bit of a different light. I talked about the complaint that Warren Buffett has about them, and I want to discuss that too, because these options have become a major problem in American business. It is outright theft. Warren Buffett discusses the fact that corporate executives like to get options because they often control the dividend policy of the company. Think about what dividends are. Dividends are a return of capital to shareholders. And the policy of a company on dividends is generally should follow from the company's investment prospects. So if I'm a company that has very good growth prospects, I would want to keep the earnings that the company generates every year so I can reinvest it in the business. Maybe I can buy more machines, or I can build additional buildings, or I can hire more programmers, or I can expand to another region. Whatever the case is, that capital, the earnings of the company, can be retained. Now, when companies get older and they slow down in their growth prospects, they exhaust their growth prospects, they will pay a dividend to shareholders. They will say, we have enough capital, and therefore we can afford to pay back some of the money in the company, some of the earnings to the shareholders. This is called a dividend. And the dividend is set by the board of directors, often at the suggestion of the executives. Now, think about what happens when a dividend is paid out of a company. Let's say the company has on its balance sheet a whole bunch of cash and machinery and land. Let's say it pays out a big dividend. When the big dividend is paid out, theoretically, if you think about it, the value of the company should drop because the company has paid out a bunch of cash. Well, if you are an executive with a stock option at $10 a share, the thing that you want to see happen more than anything is for that stock to become worth, say, $20 a share. And so what will happen is that executives will simply ignore whether a dividend should be paid or not, whether there are growth prospects, and they will simply retain all of the cash in the company, pay out no dividends, and therefore keep the value of the company artificially high. And that is one of the reasons that you see such large amounts of cash being held on the balance sheets of American corporations rather than being paid back to shareholders, where shareholders could then go use the money or make other investments with it. So now we find out that in itself is not enough for executives. Their control tacitly through boards is not enough for them to artificially keep the asset base of the company high so that their options are worth something. Now we are finding out that they are actually finagling the legal paperwork in an outright theft. And yesterday, executives of Converse Technology executives of Converse Technology were indicted. And there are some articles on the website that highlight this. I read the details of this indictment, and it's absolutely astonishing. The story was first broken by the Wall Street. You know what? It's not astonishing. I don't know why I say that. It's really not astonishing at all, and it's not surprising. The executives of Converse Technology were asked back in March by an investigating reporter of the Wall Street Journal, why is it that when we look back at the dates on which you granted yourselves and others stock options, that it always coincides with the low point in the stock price over a 12-month period? And the Wall Street Journal did a scientific modeling on this and calculated that the odds of this happening by chance were 1 in 300 billion or something like this. And at the time, the executives in the company said, no, we've checked, everything's fine, this is just coincidence. And over the next week, the story completely unraveled, and it has turned out that the executives at this company, publicly traded, worth $4 billion on the market, Converse Technology, that the executives had set up a slush fund in which they put these options and assigned them not only to themselves, not only to others in the company who they wanted to take care of, but to fictional people, outright creations, and they are now under indictment. There are now 78 plus companies that are under investigation by the SEC or the Justice Department, and including Apple Computer, by the way. And you should expect that this will widen this inquiry. It is truly a despicable sign of the state of many American businesses at the executive level. In energy news, British Petroleum shut down the Alaska pipeline, and oil, gasp, rose $2 a share. Oh my gosh, $2 a barrel. $2 a barrel. Can you imagine? Here we are at $76 a barrel, and gas rose $2 from 76 to 78. That's a 1/35% rise in the price of gasoline. And here is the interesting part. Yes, life goes on. And to me, what this episode highlights is how little, not how much, how little gasoline we produce here in America out of Alaska. Think about what would happen if Saudi Arabia's pipelines were shut down. You want to see a rise in the price of gasoline, you'll see it. And here you have the Bush administration, which is really caught. Because on the one hand, they and other Republicans want to come out and say, or always coming out and saying, we need to explore and drill for more gas and oil in Alaska. Our energy security is dependent upon it. But here is the Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman at the same time coming out the day after the Alaska pipeline is shut down. And what does he say? Nope, we're okay. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine. And you know what? For the first time, they're actually right. They're actually right. The amount of oil, I think it's 400,000 barrels a day, being produced out of Alaska compared to the 21 million barrels a day used in this country is a drop in the bucket. Now, granted, in an environment when supplies are, where supplies are tight, which they are currently, it's going to impact price, and it has impacted price. But as a percentage of U.S. consumption and as a percentage of the price, the $2 price rise, we are seeing that this has very little effect. And if anything, it should corroborate the fact that U.S. energy security cannot be fixed by drilling for additional oil in Alaska. That, to me, is the secret story hidden behind the shutdown in the Alaska pipeline. Also a story on the website. Many of you have asked or have indicated interest in all kinds of alternative forms of energy. There's an article on capturing the power of the ocean. There are new gizmos that entrepreneurs and engineers are experimenting with. Bobbing cork type things, snaky looking things that lay up near the beaches and on the waves and capture the energy of tides and waves as they go out and come in. And there is an article that I posted under today's show highlighting some of the efforts for those of you who are interested. Finally, before we get to our guest for the day, Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News, to talk about proposed new coal-fired power plants in Texas, is an article on damming up Patagonia. There is a proposal in Chile to put six dams along beautiful, pristine rivers. Beautiful, pristine rivers in one of the absolutely most dazzling places in the world, Patagonia. The battle for the environment, my friends, is not just being waged here locally. As you know, far from it, it is being waged around the globe. And the need to balance the need for energy and materials and lifestyle is having to be balanced against the needs of the environment. But I tell you that when we are contemplating damming up, when we, and I say we humans, are contemplating damming up the most beautiful, pristine rivers, some of the last ones were fly fishing for trout is possible in Patagonia, I tell you that it is time for environmental conscience to burgeon, and I believe that it is. We're going to take a short break right now, and then we will be back to talk about our own local area, the state of Texas, and coal-fired power plants with Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News, who is following the story. I'm Leo Gold, your host. This is the New Capital Show. Back in a minute. Gold back again on the New Capital Show. My guest today is Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News. Randy has been reporting, I think, more extensively than any other Texas-based reporter on the proposed coal-fired power plants that TXU, which is the primary proposer of these plants, and I think there are some secondary ones. Randy's been reporting on plans to implement these, and the accompanying story, which is the fast-tracking of the permitting process by the governor of the state, Rick Perry. It looks to me as if this is a story which is just now, perhaps too late, but perhaps not, starting to gain some traction. Randy, are you there? Randy?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, we can hear you.
Okay, great.
Welcome to New Capital Show. Pleasure great. To have you on.
Great, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Randy, take us through, first of all, my question is, Is this a Dallas story, or is it a Texas story?
Well, it's very much a Texas story overall, although Dallas is particularly involved with this because the prevailing winds for much of the summer ozone or smog season blow from south toward the north. And so the Dallas area gets the brunt of emissions from coal plants and other industrial facilities that are primarily to the south and also to the east of Dallas. So we are downwind, and so we have a particular interest in this story.
Now, why is it a Texas story at the same time?
Well, for one thing, a lot of these plants are located in areas that also have their own emerging air quality concerns. The Austin and Waco areas are fighting to hold their ozone or smog levels down to an acceptable point. Also, there's an area of East Texas around Tyler, Longview, Marshall area where a couple of these big plants are going to go. So there are stakes here for everybody, really.
Now, put this in perspective for us. TXU, I think, wants 11 plants, and then I think the article that you sent me that you'd written indicated there are an additional five that maybe other utilities are interested in putting in. Put that in perspective as to how many plants this is, or what increase, what percentage increase over existing coal-fired energy capacity does this represent?
Right. Well, TXU, which is based in Dallas, is the state's largest electric generator. And to put it in perspective, they will about double their use of coal with this plan. Coal is very much the fuel of the moment. We've had some increases in natural gas prices. The majority of Texas electricity today is generated by natural gas because we added a whole lot of natural gas plants in the 1990s. But nobody's building natural gas plants anymore because the fuel is too expensive. So now
the coal comes from... There is a strip of lignite, as I remember. There is a long strip of lignite that basically runs north, maybe south of Dallas, in the Waco area down south. And I'm assuming that these plants are intended to be located near these mines.
Well, that's correct. The lignite in Texas actually runs from up close to Texarkana to way down south of San Antonio, down even toward the coast. But... The plants, for the most part, are going in where the utilities have existing coal-burning plants, and those are all located on the lignite belt. However, a large number of these new units are going to burn what they call Western coal, which is actually Wyoming coal.
Which is Powder River coal.
That's correct, and it has a higher energy content. You get more heat from burning it. It also is lower in certain emissions, mercury and sulfur dioxide, et cetera. So for a number of reasons, if you're going to burn coal, that's probably where you want to get it from.
Now, there is a side story to this, and that is that last year, Governor Rick Perry fast-tracked, ordered the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, to put on the fast track this permitting process to add these plants. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The details bogged down a little bit, but basically it has generally in the past taken roughly a year from the time a company would file a permit request for a plant like this between the technical review process and by the state, and then the public review process where people can challenge the permit, get administrative hearings, that type of thing. That's taken about a year. What the governor did was he ordered that public review process take no more than 6 months, and that trims a lot of time off the time required to get one of these permits.
And where do we stand in this expedited process?
All of the TXU plants have permits pending. Some of them were actually proposed a little earlier than the big bunch that TXU proposed in April. And so for those plants, for the earliest plants, it's actually one two-unit plant in Robertson County, not too far from Waco. there'll probably be a draft permit out from the state next month. And there may be, there's going to be a final proposed permit, and there'll be draft permits out on the remainder, probably next month as well, which, according to the governor's schedule, would mean permit decisions next spring sometime.
And say again when public review would be?
The way that works is the TCEQ publishes the proposed or the draft permit that they've written up based on their work and based on the information that the utility provided. Then that becomes available for public review, and the public can file their challenges. And most likely, the hearing process typically involves people. Let's say I live near a plant. I can say this plant's going to affect me. It'll affect my economic welfare. It'll affect my health, et cetera, so I can file a request for a hearing. In this case, these will go to automatic expedited hearing. So there will be hearings on probably all of these. And that'll be sometime, my guess, is early next year.
Now, Laura Miller, Dallas's mayor, has weighed in recently, correct?
And that's right. She's trying to organize other mayors as well to... perhaps file as interveners.
Has Bill White here signed on at all to that effort?
I am not aware of that. It may have happened, but I just don't know.
And TXU also has a significant presence here in Houston, does it not? But not in the generating level, but as a purveyor of retail energy to customers.
That's correct. They sell power directly to customers, and they also wholesale to other companies, which in turn sell it to the actual customer.
Does Texas need these plants?
Well, there's a pretty strong argument made by the power companies and the Public Utility Commission and ERCOT, which is the state organization that runs the electric grid for most of Texas, that we are getting too close to the margin of our power availability versus our power need, especially at peak times. They say that there is definitely new power needed,
but a doubling of their capacity.
Well, curiously enough, that's some of the environmental advocates don't exactly dispute that we need more power, but their argument is that could come just as easily and with lighter environmental impact from other sources such as wind and solar and conservation, which is something that doesn't get talked about a whole lot.
Right. So adding in those sources and taking account of the fact that they don't just want to add incremental amounts of energy, they want to double the asset base. This is what causes environmentalists to believe that they're trying to sneak plants that will evade or be grandfathered from having to cap any CO2 emissions, right?
Well, yeah, the whether they can escape some ultimate CO2 regulation is really unknown. There have been concerns raised about whether this will become a new generation of grandfathered plants. And for those that might not understand that, meaning you build a plant today, you pass a new rule tomorrow, and your old plant doesn't have to meet that rule.
Right, and so the idea that people have is that, okay, 11 to 15 new power plants using old technology all at once, there's a rush on here, and Governor Perry has put a rush on the permitting process. By all appearances, it looks like they're trying to slide in plants through the permitting process that use older technology, cheaper technology, but more polluting technology.
Well, yeah, there is a possibility that the legislature, when it convenes in January, is going to take up some type of added regulation of power plants, but that's very much up in the air. So right now what they're dealing with is existing law, existing regulations, and there is very little in place right now that I'm aware of that would slow that down.
Okay, we're going to take your calls in just a second. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. This is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host, and my guest today is Randy Loftus, reporter, environmental reporter for the Dallas Morning News, and we are talking about the proposal to build... Randy, what's the number? 11, 15? I'm seeing all sorts of numbers.
Well, I've been using the number 16, and we're talking about actual number of units, not necessarily brand new plants and new sites.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the environmental people have used the term 17. There is an additional plant down in Calhoun County, which is actually going to burn petroleum coke, which is a refinery waste. It's probably legitimate to count that as a coal plant because the emissions will be similar, but just simply to be consistent with the kind of fuel we're talking about, I've used 16.
Okay. So we're talking about 16 new coal-fired power plants, but Randy, these are going to be using old technology. I think it's called pulverized coal, right? In which combustion of the coal, 100% of CO2 that results from that process is emitted into the air.
Yeah, the newer technology that might be available would be called gasification. It's a long technical term, but I'll just abbreviate it as gasification.
I asked GE to be on the show, by the way, and they couldn't make anyone available for today. But is that technology ready for prime time? Because TXU says it's not.
There's a very big debate about that. You're going to find people on all sides of that issue. You'll find people with probably equally impressive technical credentials from yes to no on that question. One of the issues that's come up in the permitting process in Texas is that the companies are not being required to consider that newer, cleaner technology as part of their permitting process. The argument for doing that would be that they have to study it. They have to make the argument that that it's not viable. But as it is now, they don't have to make the argument at all.
Now, Randy, there's another issue also, which is that if we're in the middle of this burgeoning of this new technology, why wouldn't you want to stagger implementation of the plant so that maybe one or two are built and implemented using the older technology, but as gasification gains in installations and the engineers gain in experience in developing it and implementing it, later plants of this huge batch of 16 plants might be outfitted with the technology. Why is the state not looking at that?
Well, the state had a chance with a couple of permits that have already come up on other plants in the last few months. They could have raised the bar for permits that had not yet been filed, but they chose not to do so. So they've made a policy decision that that's not going to be the case in Texas, and there's no provision that I'm aware of that's pending that would change that.
And there's also an issue, is there not, that all of these plants, despite the fact that they're basically being submitted at once and as more or less a package, the governor has ordered the TCEQ to evaluate them as single plants on a one-off basis and without any study or regard for what the entire implementation of all 16 plants would be, what the effect would be on the air. That sounds like lunacy to me.
Well, I wouldn't want to comment on that, but one of the things that I have pointed out...
Well, describe for people what... I didn't say it very well, but right. Help them understand what it is I'm trying to say.
Right. Each plant is analyzed as if it were the only one being proposed. So when the state reviews a particular permit for one plant, they will add up the emissions from that one plant, and they will say, will that one plant make a difference in air quality? And in most cases, a single plant over the entire span of East Texas might not make much difference. There is no provision in Texas regulations at this point to add them all together and say, this is how much pollution the entire region can take, and so we're not going to allow more than that amount.
Okay, let's make this clear, even clearer to people. There is a stack of applications sitting on someone's desk in the state.
Right.
16 applications are sitting on the desk.
Right.
The implementation of all 16 of those plants is going to have some effect. We don't know what it is.
Right.
But it's going to have some effect on the air quality in the state of Texas.
Right.
And the evaluator sitting at that desk is being told by the governor, I don't want to know what the effect of all 16 of those plants together is going to be on the air quality of Texas. I want you to take out of your inbox each one of those pieces of paper one by one and evaluate what the effect on air quality will be for each of these individually.
That's essentially correct. Now, to be clear on where this came from, the governor hasn't ordered that. That has been the policy of the TCEQ for a long time, and he didn't change that.
I see.
But no
one has ever proposed doubling the number of coal-fired power plants at one time before, have they?
No, that is correct. This is unprecedented, and it's the largest expansion of coal in the country.
Ever.
Yeah, probably so, yes.
The largest expansion of coal-fired power plants probably ever in this country is taking place, being proposed to take place here in Texas, and the regulating agency doesn't want to know the cumulative effect of all of those plants on it.
That is correct.
713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Randy, you got a few minutes to take some calls?
Sure enough.
Terrific. Our first call of the day is our friend Brant. Brant, welcome.
Hello, Leo.
How you doing?
Just fine. I think TXU is already greasing their public relations skid. Yesterday in the Houston Chronicle, they had a huge advertisement that touted how good they were on environmental quality and air quality. And it was about 8.5 by 11 in the front page section. and it basically said we're going to do 20% better on air quality than anybody else, and, you know, we're going to improve air quality for the future and all this stuff. So,
but Randy, I'm seeing that too. TXU is running around saying they're going to make 20% increases in their plant environmental profile quality. What are they talking about?
Here's what they're talking about. They say they can add all of these new plants and still, with it, with their new emissions, they will reduce their total emissions from all of their coal plants, including their existing ones, by a net of 20% over their 2005 emissions. Now, to do that with adding the new plants, they have to cut the emissions from their existing plants by about 69%. And they say they have the technology to do that.
Of course, they have the technology to reduce those air pollutants probably 90% if they really wanted to reduce air quality. And, you know. You know, that technology is about 69% isn't a whole lot.
Now, this is what the pollutants they're talking about, Randy and Brant, let's distinguish what they're talking about. And by the way, everyone listening, Brant, if any of you don't know, is active in the Sierra Club here in Houston. The pollutants that they're talking about, Randy, are SOx and NOx, right? This is not CO2.
That's correct.
This is traditional
Power plant emissions. That's right.
There will be
no reduction in CO2. There will be an increase in CO2.
So basically what they're saying is, okay, we're there's a tacit threat here. If you don't give us those plants, we're not going to reduce our other emissions. Is that what's lurking in the background?
Well, I'm not sure it's a tacit threat, but it is they are presenting it as a package.
So it is a bit of a PR thing to say, give us these plants, we're going to reduce as well the emissions on the other plants.
Yeah, well, certainly they would have had the option to have made those changes in their existing plants without adding the new ones.
Randy, why are your colleagues at the Houston Chronicle, for whom I have great respect, Dina Capiello, not covering this story?
I don't know.
Should they be?
Well, I think there's certainly, you know, keep in mind that in Texas we have some environmental crisis breaking out somewhere all the time. There are certainly plenty of statewide issues that I'm not covering to any extent because the press of our local concerns. So I certainly think that if there's been a different priority, I can understand that.
And Leo,
yes, Brant.
There's a much broader picture to this too. Those plants potentially will add to the burden of air pollution to Big Bend and Guadalupe National Parks, because in East Texas they have tracked and traced air pollution traveling from there all the way over to those particular areas.
Even though the prevailing winds are west to east.
Yeah, they come. They come from that eastern and
off the Gulf.
Southeastern,
yeah.
and central Texas area. So, you know, already visibility has been decreased tremendously in those two national parks.
Yeah, I would echo that.
And the law requires you to reduce it, but unfortunately the law doesn't require you to reduce it to sufficiently for 60 years. So, you know, they're going to add to that problem
because of the long life of these plants.
Yeah, the law that the EPA implemented a couple of years ago is the longest term schedule I've ever seen for an air pollution reduction program, and it's approximately 60 years to reduce it down to the levels it ought to be. So this is going to make it even worse.
Yeah, Randy, you're going to add something.
Yeah, the popular wisdom on the visibility of Big Bend has been for many years that it was primarily from some virtually uncontrolled coal plants in Mexico, and they certainly are big contributors. But the studies also show that Texas plants, which necessarily are all to the east of Big Bend, are contributors, as well as offshore oil and gas operations.
And also from the Houston area, they've shown that this petrochemical complex also adds to the problem.
Yes, that's correct.
Big Bend.
Right.
Brant, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. This is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host, and my guest today is Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News. We are talking about the plans of TXU to the large Texas utility to build and implement in a rapid time frame 16 coal-fired power plants, thereby doubling the amount of coal-fired capacity, coal-fired utility capacity that they have. This at a time when coal is undoubtedly popular because of its lower price than natural gas, but at a time when pollution of our air, emissions of CO2, global warming, all of these issues are coming daily to the forefront. I don't think you could find a more jarring collision of aims and goals than this project, Randy. What do you think?
Well, this is certainly coming at a really critical time. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, for example, there's never been a plan proposed that has ever succeeded in getting the ozone level down to what the law requires. We've had plan after plan after plan for decades, and nothing has worked. The state planners at this point can't imagine any scenario which gets them down to a legal level by the next deadline of 2010. They're now talking about postponing that until 2012. And even then, they're depending on some changes in federal rules, not only on power plants, but also on vehicles and fuels, to help them along. So they really don't know how they're going to succeed.
Is this the biggest environmental story in Dallas right now?
No question.
Okay.
No question.
Let's go back to the phones. Next up is Nicole. Nicole, welcome to New Capital Show.
Hi there. I was calling because I appreciate the story and getting this information out there, but I wanted to ask a question about solutions and how can consumers and people who are not engineers or are familiar with how the energy industry works and regulations and so forth, what kind of solutions can consumers look forward to? Because I work for a company that supports renewable energy, that provides renewable energy, but I wanted to kind of bring that into the conversation so that people can not be kind of burdened just by all this really bad news.
Okay, Nicole, I'm going to let you go, and then I'm going to rephrase your question just a bit for Randy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Randy, people who are interested in having a voice into this process of these coal plants, what do you see as the best and most effective way to go about it?
Well, probably without question, as with almost any statewide public issue, talking to your legislator, letting your local representative or state senator know how you feel is always the starting point. But on top of that, there are a number of organizations that are tracking this very carefully from an environmental and consumer point of view. The Lone Star chapter, the state chapter of the Sierra Club, Public Citizen, quite a number of other organizations, Environmental Defense, are paying a lot of attention to this, and so certainly their websites can offer a lot of insights. But you know, the point the caller made really is an important one. I mean, this is not simply a matter of a company trying to do something that is controversial. The need for power in Texas is driven by individual decisions. People have not generally adopted a conservation-minded lifestyle, and certainly there's an individual role to be played there.
Let's see. Next up is Andre. Andre, welcome to New Capital Show. You're on with Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
A pleasure.
Because I've already written my legislative about 15 letters. I think they're getting tired of me, but they keep sending me back these pre-printed letters with these, you know, generated signatures, but I keep sending them letters.
Keep sending.
My question is that, and I'll take it off the air after I asked it, how effective do you think solar-powered panels or wind-powered generators, and I'm talking about the small ones that you can attach to your home, that will initially allow people to unplug from the grid in a protest and let the big businesses that are planning on building these coal plants, that they do not want the air polluted, but we need energy. But I want to just get your guys' take on how effective do you think a small wind generator maybe attached to a house or maybe a solar panel attached to the roof would be for an everyday individual. I'll take them.
Thank you, Andre.
Yes, thank you.
Randy, are the alternative forms that you referred to, and Andre's asking about them, not at the central power generating level, but he's asking at the personal level, where you would actually make installations of solar or wind on your own home?
Well, there are places all over the world where you have locally micro-generated wind and solar power. They are simply not available in most parts of the United States, and the individual can expect to pay a pretty hefty premium to install that on an individual home. It's probably out of reach for the average consumer. We have simply not gotten there yet. Now, the price of solar has come way down over the years, but it still is pretty expensive. So in general, in terms of what's practically available for consumers here in Texas, that's a pretty tough choice to talk about that kind of individual installation.
And yet central wind plants are now in Texas. Texas is now the largest producer. I saw an article off of AP and announced the article a few weeks ago. Texas is now the largest producer of centrally produced wind power in the country.
That's correct.
And also the state has a law which compels local utilities to purchase a small percentage of their energy from such sources. Is that correct, Randy?
Yeah, there's a perpetual fight in the legislature to get the state to increase the percentage of the total power generation for the state that's supposed to come from renewables. Right now, it's really pretty small, but it's been growing, and in most parts of the state, you can buy wind power from a company for a slight premium over the price of
Green Mountain Energy.
Yeah, I mean they have a variety of plans available depending on where you live. Where I live, for example, in Dallas, you can buy a combination of wind and hydroelectric power from them for the same price you pay TXU, and the hydro in that case is from already existing dams, so they wouldn't be damming up any more rivers for that.
Andre, I want to address your question out of my own personal experience. I have installed both solar and wind power at my ranch, which is off the grid. And my experience, and the ranch is located between Houston and Austin, let's say somewhere around Columbus-LaGrange area. My experience, and the wind has not been in for very long. It's been in the summer, and it may be that the winds don't blow as much during the summer. You get these kind of doldrums. But my experience is that the solar power installation provides far more energy for the dollar than does wind. And so if any of you are thinking of one of these options, I saw something on ABC News the other night where they're talking about wind turbines. I would not say don't look into it, but my suggestion would be that here in Texas we have an incredible wealth of energy from the sun hitting solar panels, and I have found in my own personal experience solar panels to be far more effective. How much more effective? Well, for the same dollar, I am producing 14 times more power with the solar panels for the same dollar cost as the wind turbine. That's pretty significant.
Right, that is significant. I would add to that, if you live in town, you're going to have a dickens of a time getting zoning approval for a windmill. But you probably wouldn't have much trouble with solar panels.
Yeah, because the wind thing's got to be way up there, 50 feet in the air, and there are going to be issues. So if you're a Texan looking at alternative energy, I would urge you to look at solar panels. You can mount them on your roof, and I think that many of you could get some real benefits from putting solar panels on your house, and including putting excess energy back onto the grid itself.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the higher your electric bill goes, the better the savings are.
Absolutely. Next call of the day is, we've got 10 minutes left, is Ken. Ken, welcome to New Capital Show.
Nice to talk to you again. TXU is actually selling 11 of their gas oil plants in Texas that they considered no longer either economic on the high gas, or they just didn't want to manage the supply side of the gas to make these plants economic. So they're selling 10 when they want to And that's a total of about 11,000 megawatts of capacity.
Yeah, Ken, if you read, if one of the things that Wilder, what's his name? Wilder.
John Wilder.
John Wilder, the CEO. This is an aggressive, MBA-trained, fairly young 48-year-old CEO who has really driven up the stock price, and it's a classic business case of getting rid of underproducing assets. He's done that, and I certainly don't fault him for doing that. He's in the position that he's in, and he's going to strip the company of assets that are not going to provide the returns that coal does. And coal will continue to provide high returns until the public stands up and says, we want you to account for the true cost of burning coal, including all of the emissions, including CO2. Randy, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, they have quite a number of plans underway all at once. They have had these older gas plants for sale. They haven't had any buyers yet. I don't know they have any on the hook right now either. Their plan involves building the majority of their new coal-burning units at the sites of existing plants, either existing coal plants or existing gas plants. Where they go, at the site of an existing gas plant, they're planning on basically decommissioning and dismantling the old gas plant when they build the new coal plant.
Ken, thank you for the call.
Wait, I got one more thing I need to say.
You bet.
We're installing the first 100% renewable liquid fuel power plant just outside of Houston in Oak Ridge North. That's only going to be 5 megawatts, but it's the beginning, and it's obviously a zero carbon balance because we're using fuels grown from vegetable oils. There's no toxic, you know, fumes coming out, no high levels of nitrated hydrocarbons.
How do we get information? Do you give us a website?
You can go to www.harc.edu and look under clean air and clean energy, and you'll see the Southwest Biodiesel Initiative.
HARC.edu.
Yeah, that's HARC, Houston Advanced Research Center. And there are a wealth of information on both NOx reduction strategies for existing plants and NOx reduction strategies for biodiesel fuel plants.
Ken, thanks for the call. Good luck with the project.
Bye.
You know, folks, your energy, when you turn on the lights, doesn't just come from nowhere. It doesn't come from just, you know, out of the wire. It's got to come from somewhere. And you ought to care about where it comes from. You ought to care about whether pollutants are getting put into the air in order for you to burn lights and so forth. Next call of the day is Steve. Steve, welcome to New Capital Show. You're on with Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News. We're talking about proposed new coal power plants.
Hey, quick question for you. Out of the wind generation that's going on, most of it's out in West Texas, correct?
Yes.
Who's the electricity provider that's involved in it the most?
Randy, do you know?
Well, the Green Mountain Energy is the one that everybody's going to think about first and foremost. They don't have any kind of fossil fuel plants at all. The way the system works in Texas is if you buy your power from a particular company that generates its power in a particular way, you're not getting just that power. It's all dumped into one bucket and then mixed up, and then it comes to your house. What you're doing when you buy renewable power from a particular company is you're basically giving that you're authorizing that company to dump as much electricity as you use into the grid. So ultimately, you're replacing somebody else who's.
We lost Steve. I think everybody got the answer there, Randy. Let's move on to the next call. We've got about 5 minutes left. This is New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, and we are talking to Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News. Randy has been covering the story of TXU's proposed new coal power plants more diligently than any other Texas reporter. Anyone working the story in Austin, Randy, or San Antonio?
Well, there are certainly local reporters covering it there because they clearly have a stake in this. The city-owned utility in San Antonio has recently gotten a permit to build a new coal plant. Austin is going to be impacted by some of these new plants from TXU and other companies.
You bet. Companies. Very close to Austin.
This is certainly something that has caught the public's attention, and I imagine the press is going to be spending more and more time on this, as well as should.
It should. Harry, you're next. Go ahead. Harry, welcome to New Capital Show. Okay, next is Lee. Lee, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, just got a quick question. I know at one time it was legal to to basically have a solar panel or a windmill on your house and sell the electricity back to the utility, run your meter backward or slow it down. Is that still something that can be done? Because it seems like, I mean, a lot of the power plants nowadays are really only there for peak loads. They're tearing one down in Webster, not too far away from us, and it was just only for peak loads. And I told my wife, if we build a new back porch, put solar panels on it, it won't power the whole house. But during a peak time like this, it would make a difference.
Yes, it would.
Do that. So Randy? I don't know if that's still possible. Thank you.
Randy?
If you generate more power than you use and it goes back into the grid and you get money knocked off your electric bill. One of the problems with wind power, although we have, as you can imagine, you know, vast capacity for wind power in Texas, a lot of the wind blows at night, and the peak load is during the day. So it doesn't exactly match, and you can't store this stuff. You can't put it in batteries. There are no batteries. So that's one of the limitations on wind power in Texas.
Next call of the day is Radhika.
Yes, hi.
Did I say your name right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Two things. Public Citizen in Austin, Texas, is very active in opposing these coal plants. And they're having a protest in front of the governor's mansion on August 25th, Friday. And you can, get in touch with their office, Public Citizen Texas office, at 512-477-1155. And
give the number again, Radhika.
512-477-1155.
Okay.
And number two, Houston has, we've recently formed a group called the Houston Climate Protection Alliance.
Yes.
It's about maybe 4 or 5, 6 months old, and it's a well-kept secret. But we're looking for more people to attend our meetings. We meet once a month.
Will you be at the Peak Oil Conference?
Yes.
Okay. I want to right now put out a small advertisement for the Peak Oil Conference Sunday. There are actually going to be, from the program guide that I can see, some officials from Houston who will be there, including Carl Pepley, who was here on the air about a month back. And if anyone wants to ask Carl about the position of the mayor's office on these power plants, that would be a good place to do it, and in public, and any other questions that you want to ask, the Peak Oil Conference, and you can go to www.houstonpeakoil.org. Those folks have done a very good job, as far as I can tell, putting this program together, and maybe you can say hello to Radhika while you're there. Okay?
Okay. Thank
and,
you.
Let me add something, too. I want to put in a plug for a book with which I have no connection whatsoever except having read it, called Big Coal. It's by Jeff Goodell, G-O-O-D-E-L-L. The subtitle is The Dirty Secret Behind America's Energy Future. And he deals in tremendous detail with what's going on with coal and politics.
Randy, give the book name one more time and
sure.
The author.
Sure, it's Big Coal.
Big Coal.
And the author is Jeff Goodell, G-O-O-D-E-L-L.
Okay. Randy Loftus, we are out of time. I have sure enjoyed having you on the show. Will you keep us up to date from time to time if I ask you to?
You bet.
On how this is going. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so
Thank
much.
You for appearing.
Take care.
My guest has been Randy Loftus of the Dallas Morning News, a reporter covering the story of the TXU power plants. It's in your hands, folks. It's up to you. We can only bring to you these stories, but it's up to you to take action and to make your voice heard. You can do it with Sierra Club Public Citizen Environmental Defense and write your legislator. This is a huge issue. The profile of Texas emissions is being written right now. Are you going to make your voice heard? I hope so. www.newcapitalshow.com is the website. If you want to join the show's mailing list, and I hope you will, it helps me communicate with you. It helps us be more effective in our joint efforts together. www.newcapitalshow.com. It's been a pleasure being with you. I wish you a great day and a great week. Take care.
Houston Muslims are working with their fellow non-Muslims to paint a mural representing peace and unity. The painting will be displayed on Saturday, August 5th at the Rice University Lay Student Center Farnsworth Pavilion at 11 a.m. The exhibition will remain at Rice University through August 25th, 2006. There's no admission fee. The project was created by Imrana Malik, a local physician. Dr. Malik developed this project while participating in the Landmark Education Leadership Program. The program is being conducted in conjunction with the Muslim American Society with the help of Interfaith Ministries of Greater Houston, Bonwick Center, Rothko Chapel, and Mahatma Gandhi Library in KPFT Houston. For more information, call 832-563-0199. This is KPFT Houston.
I'm KPFT General Manager Dwayne Bradley. The on-air debut of Informativo Pacifica, the new national Spanish language news, and the shift to KPFT-I of Flashpoints from our schedule have drawn some great interest among listeners. We at KPFT are sensitive to your need for intelligent coverage during this latest Middle East crisis. Flashpoints will remain on our schedule into September. With the Flashpoints extension, the premiere of Informativo Pacifica will be delayed a few weeks as